There is a growing portion of Canadians who have a beef with beef. The belief appears to be that beef is bad for humans and cattle are bad for the environment and the atmosphere. In fact, according to the Canadian Centre for Food Integrity, one third of us are negative about food production in Canada and another third are losing faith in the system. Beef is front and center. There are inaccurate arguments that suggest we could eliminate cattle and substitute it with plant-based protein, and in doing so, we'd all be better off and so would the environment. Bob Lowe, the president of the Cattlemen's Association, has heard it all, and he says it simply isn't true. In fact, if you take cattle off of the grasslands, then those grasslands and the thousands of species that call them home will die. He's right. Science has demonstrated that large grazing ruminants are essential to the health and well-being of grasslands. Cows graze, and when they do, they turn the soil over, and their saliva, urine, and poop fertilizes the land. And then when they chomp on the grasses, that action in turn stimulates growth, which sequesters carbon. And what they are eating is sequestered carbon, and then they convert those grasses into protein-rich nutrients. They also eat corn and barley and potatoes that are not fit for human consumption, and they convert those carbon-based organisms into protein, and in the process also reduce food waste. And then there is their place in the flow of carbon. Cows burp, and that is the byproduct of carbon conversion that happens in their bodies, which is then emitted as methane, which eventually returns to carbon in the atmosphere and is once again sequestered in the vegetation the cows eat. I invited Bob Lowe, the president of the Cattlemen's Association, to join me for a conversation that matters about the vital role cattle play in our well-being and the well-being of the environment. Now, just before we get to that conversation, here is an excerpt from the documentary Guardians of the Grasslands.
Basically, with grass, what they say is that you've got what you have above ground, you also have below ground. So if you have grass that looks like this above ground, then you also have roots that look like this below ground. But with native prairies, it's like threefold, where the roots really extend deep into the soil. The benefit of that is there's two cycles of carbon, and the above ground stuff every year in the spring, like right now, it's sucking carbon from the air and producing plant matter above ground and below. But all the stuff above ground gets cycled back into the air again within, usually by the end of the summer or for sure by the next year. The stuff that goes into the ground is the roots, and that stuff's what becomes really stable and long-lasting in the soil. And that's how they build organic matter here. So this ranch is 65,000 acres, and it sequesters, currently right now, there are approximately 2 million tons of carbon, which is the equivalent to the emissions from over 100,000 Canadians for a year. So that is stable, long-term, and permanent in the ground as long as we have an intact ecosystem and cattle grazing on it.
Over the last decade, the story of cows and the environment has been a hot topic, but the narrative has been focused on cattle's contribution to climate change and the destruction of the rainforest. The idea that cattle could be integral to the health of an ecosystem is a very different story. In order to understand the real impact of cattle on a specific ecosystem, we have to look at the context.
The context is so important. We're not standing in a rainforest, we're standing on the Canadian prairie. And so in that context, we need grazers and we need a livestock industry to keep the prairie, what's precious left of it, where it is. And so in our Canadian context, let's think about what's most sustainable for here.
So what role do cattle play in the grasslands ecosystem?
What happens is the glaciers came and wiped off all the topsoil, so we had no life. There was nothing here. And it grew topsoil down into the soil. I always thought that topsoil grew up and it was an accumulation of something, but topsoil actually grows down into the dirt, and it's just a conversion of inorganic dead rock and silt and sand into actually this dark black life, which is like an Amazon rainforest, but underground, where you have little tiny T-Rex predators, and they're going around and killing other things and prey animals and parasites, and it's a whole complex web underground, an ecosystem that's alive. And by having cattle here, they're creating that life. They're the keystone species in this ecosystem. It was the bison before them, and the bison completely built this into the ecosystem that we have today and built all the topsoil and sequestered all the carbon. And when they disappeared, these grasslands became sick and they needed to have another keystone large herbivore grazing on it.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the following and viewers like you. Please become a patron at conversationsthatmatter.tv.
Bob Lowe, thanks for joining me from your feedlot in southern Alberta. Beef, as you know all too well, is in the news and on social media. And to be frank, it's being pilloried by numerous sectors. Despite this, I'd like to get from you a sense of how is the cattle sector really doing? What is the state of the industry?
Right at the moment, I'd say it's healthy. It's normal. Part of the industry's losing money, part of the industry's making money. COVID affected the feeding industry really hard for a while. We're working our way through that. The cow-calf industry, calves are selling for a really good price, all things taken into consideration right now. So I'd say it's healthy.
So what's driving up the price of beef?
There's a lack of protein in the world, and we're the eternal optimists. So couple those two things together, and the lifespan, these particular cattle here, they'll be food in probably 45 to 60 days. The ones we drove past at the other end, they'll be next June, July.
Right.
Nobody knows what's going to happen then, so being eternal optimists and the fact that the world can't produce enough protein is keeping the prices up, I think.
When we take a look at the role of cattle in the food supply system, what is its contribution to meeting the nutritional needs of consumers?
A huge role. Beef cattle are designed to take poor quality forages and turn them into high quality, nutritious food source. Food waste is a big thing nowadays. The amount of food waste would be a whole lot bigger if we didn't get to put call potatoes, for instance, through cattle like this and turn it into a high quality nutritious food. It's a symbiotic relationship, the grain industry, the grass, cattle. It all works very well together. You move any one segment away and the whole will be diminished a whole bunch.
When you're talking about food waste, you're referring to food that when it left the field was not fit for human consumption. In other words, we can't eat that food, but they can.
Yep, I know operations, we don't, because we aren't close to any vegetable processing facilities, for instance. But I know places that call potatoes that don't make it to the grocery store, they get put through cattle, they get fed. Otherwise it would just go to the landfill. Dried distillers grains from the distilling industry. They do whatever they do, and the leftover feeds cattle.
So this is part of the magic of cattle in the food system.
Sure it is. Land that cannot be used for anything else, cattle can take grass and forages and turn it into beef, where otherwise a grassland ecosystem without a large grazer turns into shrub and bush. It deteriorates completely.
This is fairly new science that has confirmed this, because in the past there was a belief that cattle were detrimental to the health of grasslands. That new science confirmed that large grazing ruminants play a vital role in the health of grasslands.
We've got test plots back in the hills where we run cattle that have been fenced in enclosures for 50 years. Started out as grass, as a really nice rough fescue pasture, and it ends up just shrub bush and things that really has no benefit to anybody.
So what happens? How is it that a large grazing animal is beneficial to grasslands?
They keep the grass healthy. the grass, instead of just getting old and maturing and dying and making a mat that eventually gets too big, and the only thing that can grow through it, it'll sour the ground, is bushes and things. Cattle, by their very nature of eating the grass, they keep the grass growing. They keep it green and lush, you know, until weather like this. but they keep it growing, and as long as that grass is green and growing, the other thing it's doing is sequestering carbon.
True. However, there's one other point I'd like you to touch on, and that is, you know, what is the role of those large grazing ruminants and their saliva, urine, and poop in helping to keep those grasslands healthy?
Fertilizer. It feeds the bugs, which the excrement, I guess, if you want to call it, from cattle. It's all about the bugs, and good quality soil is loaded with little bugs. And that's what actually the manure hits the ground, the bugs eat the manure, the bugs go into the ground, do whatever the bugs do, the bugs die. That fertilizes the soil, which brings the grass, which starts the whole cycle all over again.
It's remarkable. Now, another point that I'm hoping that you can help me grasp, I guess, is it's my belief that by virtue of the fact that the cattle are eating the grass, they, or that action of eating, stimulates the grasses to continue to grow. Yep. And forces the root system further into the earth.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Sure. It's stress on the plant itself. So providing the grazing is done properly, it does exactly what you say. Now you can, if by overgrazing or undergrazing, they both end up the same way, the grass dies. So, but proper grazing is, that's exactly what happens.
What they are eating is sequestered carbon.
Yeah, that's how the grass grows.
Now, since the time when I first met you back in the spring, I've learned that the building block of anything that cattle eat is carbon. And so what they're consuming is carbon-based material.
Exactly, and I'll go one step further. What you and I are made of is carbon. Yes. I mean, that's just, anything living is carbon.
Well, preparing for this interview, I was directed by somebody to watch a video that went into great detail about cows and their production of greenhouse gases. The problem with the video is that it was wrong. It didn't mention the carbon cycle, and then it went on to blame the production of methane from cows on their farts, not burps, which I now know is the source of that biogenic methane. It is burping, right?
Yeah, it's burping.
And in this video, there's no mention of the fact that cattle are not producing new GHGs. Rather, they are part of a carbon cycle. Part of carbon flow.
They're part of the flow. And methane, what science is starting to show us now, is methane has a lifespan. I think it's like 10 years in the atmosphere. So assuming that everything stays the same, assuming cattle numbers stay exactly the same now as in 10 years from now, the methane will stay exactly the same. It will not increase.
What is the cattle population in North America?
Oh, 100. See, we're about... and probably about 100 million cows, maybe.
And that's down since the 1970s.
In Canada, I don't know about the U.S. numbers, but I suspect they're awfully close. In Canada, we're producing the same amount of beef as we were in the 70s with 25% less cattle.
Earlier, you talked about COVID-19, which has had a number of impacts on the cattle industry. But it's also had an impact on other industries that allow us to take a look at the relationship between cattle and greenhouse gas production.
I guess the total volume, you'd say, of greenhouse gases during COVID-19 went down, but the cattle industry stayed the same. Numbers of cattle stayed the same. So apparently cattle aren't that big a deal in the whole thing. I mean, we look at the industries that really drastically decreased, and that's transportation being the big one. And I don't want to compare industry to industry, but, you know, what I'm trying to say is cattle are really not denying that we do contribute to greenhouse gases. We're doing everything in our power to lessen that amount, but it's a very small amount at the best of times anyway. Like, I think 2% of Canada's greenhouse gas emissions come from the cattle industry.
How then do new greenhouse gases get produced by the cattle industry? Because, as you already explained, the methane comes from burps and is part of flow. So how is it that the cattle industry is producing new GHGs?
I don't think there is new greenhouse gases being emitted by cattle, but we're in the process, and we've set some goals as the Canadian cattle industry of mitigating the greenhouse gases. What it's beginning to look like is cattle are actually sort of an emitter. They're the opposite of an emitter of greenhouse gases. So they actually net benefit. They actually sequester more carbon than they give off, or cause the sequestration of more carbon than they give off.
That's a tough and contradictory message to get out.
I don't know why, I don't understand why, but there is a segment of the population, it's a very small one, I believe, but very well funded, that wants to eliminate animal agriculture. And they haven't looked, or they don't want to look, at you eliminate cattle from the environment and you're hurting the environment is what you're doing.
Because cattle are a vital member of the cycle of life.
Exactly.
One of the other topics, as outlined in your strategic plan, that being the Cattlemen's strategic plan, is to continue to address issues around animal welfare. People, and by that I mean consumers, want to know the animals are being treated in the best possible way. So what steps are you taking to ensure there is continual improvements in animal welfare?
Well, if cattle are my livelihood, if I hurt them, that hurts me. It doesn't hurt. You know, it just seems it's poor business to hurt them. So things we do, like a day like this, cattle in Canada are designed for weather like this. They get a lot more hair in the winter. They get a lot warmer. We'll also, once they finish eating, we'll put straw out to bed them. Some of the new stuff that's come around is pain mitigation. And we've experimented with meloxicam and some of these pain inhibiting drugs. They work.
Okay, I got another question for you, and another hole in my understanding that I'm hoping that you can fill in about cattle. You're at a feedlot at the moment. What are you feeding cattle when they're in the feedlot, as opposed to when they're out roaming in the grasslands?
We're basically barley-based. Our silage is barley. The grain that we feed here is barley. The straw that we use is a barley or wheat. But what you feed cattle, and we'll feed wheat sometimes too, but we feed the wheat. We aren't in competition with human grains because they cost too much. We feed the cheaper end of the stuff.
So how much of their lives are spent in the feedlot?
These cattle here would be, they're a year and a half old, and they've been in a feedlot for about 2 months.
So the rest of the time, they're out in the grasslands?
They're out in the grasslands, yeah.
So they're eating grass?
Yeah, they're eating grass. They're finished. It's, you know, they talk about grain-fed beef. Well, it's actually grain-finished beef. Most of the food they eat is grain, or is grass, I mean, is a roughage of some kind.
So the majority of their life, they eat grass supplemented by grains. Is that accurate?
Majority of life, they're eating grass. When they come in here, it'll be mostly grain.
Okay, what's the difference? When someone says, oh yeah, okay, I'll have beef so long as it's grass-fed.
What that would actually mean is those cattle would have gotten no grain. So they'd be grass-fed through their whole lifespan. Problem with that is it takes probably an extra year, a year and a half to finish them.
One other thing I hope you can help clear up for me is the use of hormones. It's my understanding that growth hormones allow cattle to retain more of, they're a bit more like me. They hang on to more of the calories they consume.
Exactly. Growth hormones promote the development of red meat, as opposed to the development of fat. So that's it in a nutshell.
So back to the challenge you face, that being your voice is small. You're not the best at the social media game, and that puts you at a disadvantage in the messaging world.
I got faith in humanity. I still think most people appreciate the fact that they have beef on the shelves and it's reasonably priced. And our job is to make sure that we've got the story right, make sure that we continually adapt to the new science, which we wouldn't be here if we didn't, and to keep those people there. You know, the vocal minority seem to be winning, and maybe over time they will, but that's our job, is to make sure they don't.
I understand that because so few people are actually in agriculture as a profession these days, you know, does that put you, the same as anybody else who's in the food production business, into that interesting human resources challenge where you're having trouble to attract talent? And if so, what's your message to people who may be considering a career in ag?
That's one of our big things right now with CCA, is attracting young people into the industry. And we've got two different programs, the Cattlemen's Young Leaders and the Young Cattlemen's Council, which are both designed to get young people into both the policy-making end of the industry and just familiarize them with the industry. COVID, you hate to say something like COVID could be an opportunity, but what it's shown is that all of a sudden people are thinking that, gee, you know, we've been generations where you just went to the grocery store and got your food. Nobody's been to the grocery store and haven't been able to get the food they wanted. Well, a few times in COVID that happened. We've got an opportunity now to kind of strike while everybody's thinking about it. You know, make people aware of where their food comes from. Make them, or give them the confidence that the food supply in Canada is secure and it is safe. And make them proud, or get them to be proud of how the food is produced in Canada, all of it. The grains, the potatoes, the beef. As soon as we get that happening, which I believe we're on a good track, as soon as we can get that happening, then we're going to get governments that will support the industry. You know, all governments are as a reflection of the people. If we can actually move this in this little bit of window that we've got, so that we can actually, you know, a Canadian goes on a holiday to Switzerland or somewhere, if that's ever allowed again, and you know, so, you know, we've got a really good, safe, secure food system in Canada. That's what I want to see.
Well, the Canadian Centre for Food Integrity, in a recent study, says there is enough messaging out there right now that has a disturbing amount of the population questioning if the food system is safe and sustainable. And yet, when you do research about food production and safety, the research says, yes, the system is safe.
And the fact that people are questioning it now means they're thinking about it, which means we've got the opportunity to show them.